Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to episode 11 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So announcements this week. We had a couple more castings announced. That was Liam Carney was cast as Old Alec. And I think I was looking over his IMDb and a majority... First of all, there's no picture up, so I can't really verify that it's his. I'm fairly sure it is his. But he, if it is the same person, he apparently was in Braveheart. So our first Braveheart connection, I believe.
It may or may not be our first. It's the first one I know of, though. It's very possible. But we were saying just before we started recording that it would be odd to have a Scottish-themed film completely produced in Scotland and have absolutely no tie to Braveheart in some manner. So I think it's probably rather fitting.
Agreed. And our other casting was for the part of Letitia. I believe the Gaelic pronunciation is Ashlyn or Ashleen, but it looks like Isling or Islin.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, we're not students of the Gaelic, so we do a little bit of research and do our best.
And that's my best, people. I'm sorry.
Did you say your last name?
Oh, no, I did not. This one I might butcher as well. McGuckin?
I think McGuckin? You're pretty safe with that one.
I looked through her IMDb chart as well, and it looks like she has been doing a lot of British TV series.
Her skin, I kept looking. I know she's not a Jamie in a kilt, but I go back to that photo like every few days. Her skin is ridiculously bright and gorgeous.
I've always considered myself to be quite pale, and I think she makes me look Moroccan.
Moroccan?
Just some random darker colored skin.
Okay. So what else did we learn this week besides the casting announcements?
Well, I think more importantly than the casting announcements was the announcement that they have completed filming for episodes 1 and 2 of the Outlander series.
Yes, and it was very exciting. They started on, the 12th? I'm not sure of the date right now. I don't have the exact number in my mind, but I know it was towards the early, not early, the middle, towards the, maybe between, the 12th and the 15th, I think, of October that they started, and which was later than they had originally planned. I think they said they were trying to begin in September, but because of a number of things, one of them being maybe Claire. They started filming a little bit later. And so basically less than a month, because we're not into the double digits of November yet. And I know they were in the double digits of October when they started filming. So between 3 and 4 weeks to film 2 episodes, 2 1-hour episodes. So what was interesting is that before they started filming, they had announced who the director of the first 2 episodes would be. They had announced that they were written and complete. And actually, I think I do remember in the last few weeks reading on Twitter that episodes 3 and 4, I think, were completely written. But we do not have the name of a director yet. I don't remember. If it's been given, I definitely missed it.
I think, didn't somebody on Twitter say that they've written quite a few episodes,
it could have been more, but
predominantly, I wouldn't say completed, but that there was more completed than incomplete at this point is how it sounded to me.
I didn't read that, but it's very possible. I'm thinking that 3 and 4 have to be done because I'm guessing they'll be beginning those next or soon. So we know 1 and 2 are done. Hopefully 3 is beginning soon. And I would be curious. I am curious to find out who the director of 3 and 4, or just 3, however they do it, will be.
think they said in the beginning that they planned on filming two episodes at a time, pretty much the whole time.
Yeah. As far as the yeah, and that makes sense to have, of course, the same director. So we learned that they finished filming. Any other tidbits? Any other announcements or
most of the other announcements we received were in the form of like pictures, random pictures. The one that I liked, I was actually quite amazed. The one they had a picture of a sign in the costume department that they stated, they said, "Congratulations, at the end of 5 weeks, this department will have created 122 costumes from scratch." I believe it also said that it's nothing short of a miracle. That is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked in a costume shop, obviously not on that scale, and we've built things from scratch, but I mean, 122 costumes, like, and these are like costumes that you have to see close up, so they have to be perfect, mm-hmm. as opposed to like stage costumes where they just have to look good from
you can patch 10 things rows on, back.
Yeah. So, to create these costumes that look just as good standing next to you as they would 10 feet away, that's a lot. I wonder how many people they have in their costume crew. At least that interests me. I'm not sure if that interests other people, but.
No, it would be, I have not worked on a costume crew, but or in a shop, but I'd be interested to know how many people who are on her team and then the hours they have. That would be interesting.
And if they have any openings.
Yes. And
for crafty people. I'm not a sewer, but I'm crafty.
So if there's ever any chance in any universe that she may hear this, just a quick shout out, Terry Fanning, you're awesome. And your team. That's, we can't wait to see. We've seen only very little in some photos, but what we've seen is beautiful. And we can't wait to see more.
And I really want that blue coat.
Oh my gosh. Can I talk about that blue coat? Yeah. That blue coat, Claire's blue coat is gorgeous. Was gorgeous.
I just want it. It's pretty. We also got a picture of a cow. Thanks, Ron Moore. It's a cute cow.
It was a Highland cow, and they're all cute.
They're so fuzzy. They're kind of like a teddy bear mixed with a cow.
With big horns that can kill you.
Well, I mean, if you're going to get, you know, technical.
Wasn't there another picture that you liked? The one with all the equipment stacked up?
I don't even know what that was.
I don't know. It looked like a mountain of equipment, but one thing that was interesting that numerous people remarked on was
the green screen,
the apparent green screen. So that we did chat a little bit about that, like what it could be. Well, besides the fact that it was at least it looked most like a green screen, but we said, what might it be used for filming, obviously, what scene that was in episodes 1 and 2. And we agreed that the one that made the most sense would have been, her going through the stones. Now, we don't know how it's being filmed, so they may not be using it. It could have been for,
I mean, honestly,
the ghost scene. We just don't know.
It could have been for anything, because yeah. We don't know to what degree they have to use green screen. We don't mm-hmm. know how much of the sets are organic and how much they have to recreate mm-hmm. with computers. So this could have been something more scientific, you know, sci-fi-esque, like a going through the stones kind of scene, or it could have been, hey, we're going out on the field and we don't have the right background, so we need something that looks like the castle in the background for them to stand in front of. It could have been something as mm-hmm. simple as that.
But or it could be for the future. We just don't know.
It could be anything.
Anything.
So we'll just have to wait and see. So it was kind of a mean thing to tweak, because we're like, we have no idea what that is. I mean, it looks like I see a lot of equipment, but I have no idea if I can specify what anything is other than the fact that there's a big green screen.
In the very back. And were there any other?
The only other thing, and this was not really show related, but mm-hmm. we did see that Diana Gabaldon's book tour has been listed on the Random House website.
Yes, Random House's website, if you look under author events or events, it lists them. And you can see, I did not count them, but we did post the URL on Facebook, and I guess, which goes to Twitter. But anyway, so I'm sure they will be updating that, and we will definitely be checking back to see more, just because we're curious, and to see where she might go, and where we might be able to go, and maybe meet her for a signing. It would be, but I did see a lot of others posting that link as well, which is awesome. And people talking about it and being excited about seeing how close she might be coming to them, or maybe lamenting over the fact that she wasn't yet at least listed going somewhere close to them. But it's so early right now. I don't think there were more than like 10 or 11 cities. I could be wrong, but again, I did not count. But it was not a very long list. And we have 4 months until it even starts. And the tour, I'm not mistaken, is going to be longer than March and April. She usually travels for quite a while, I think.
So if you're interested, feel free to go check that out. See if your city is one of the cities she's going to. And maybe if not, maybe shoot Random House an email and tell them your city's interested. I'm not saying that's going to do anything, but it couldn't hurt.
That's true. You know, with the fan input or request, it may just happen.
Maybe. So I think that wraps up announcements. So on to this week's read-along. We read chapter 9, titled The Gathering. And I see that Ginger's brought her trusty notes. So I'll let her begin, and hopefully she'll let me interject if I disagree and or have anything to add.
Of course, always. Although the chapter is titled The Gathering, there's not much gathering going. It's a lot of, you see the beginning of the preparations for. You see the people coming, you see what they're doing for it, but you don't see a lot of events that are necessarily related to a gathering.
True, but we did gather some rather important new characters.
Oh, I thought you were going to say we did gather some fruit.
No.
Because there was they did. There was a lot of orchard gathering.
I just mean some important new characters.
Oh, and we will get to that. So, yes.
So that is, they were gathered.
That's true. I guess you could say
And if
that.
She hadn't gone gathering with she the ladies, have. She would never have met
one of the characters.
One of the new characters.
So one of the things that I noticed, and this is not content, this is not storyline related, but one of the things I noticed, so basically right away, I was given the sense of this community. When she describes her day, her new routine, how she would get up and go do this and go do that, and then if she was tired enough, or not tired enough, she would go listen to the bard. Or if she was too tired, she would go straight to bed. When she was talking about this, the first thing she said every morning was that she had to get up at dawn to go eat breakfast with everyone else. Imagine having not just your family, but imagine living in a town or in a small village where probably at least 100 inhabitants, I'm guessing, in the castle, maybe 50. But everyone gathering at the meal at the same time. And if you were late or you missed it, oops, too bad, unless you were sick or something. So I thought, wow, just to be in a place where everyone took all meals together.
I just want to know what time Miss Fitz gets up. Or does she go to sleep?
Gosh.
Because if everyone else is getting up at dawn and breakfast is ready for them, how early or does she sleep? Like I stated, does she sleep at all? Does she get to sleep? Because you know she's probably the last one to go to bed because she's got to clean up after the big meal.
Mm.
And then I don't know, maybe she has her kitchen girls start breakfast.
Her merry maids.
Her merry maids. No, those are maids. I'm talking maids about her kitchen.
That's true.
Kitchen staff.
Well, I also read about her cute name. I thought it was cute for Beaton's closet. She called it her skulkery.
Skulkery, I did see
that. That made me laugh. Claire basically tells us, or we learn about Claire's routine, and we see that she is developing a routine there at the castle. And as she speaks with one of the ladies somewhere in the castle, I believe, she learns that the last gathering was about 20 years prior.
Yes.
Which is quite a long time. So it makes me think if the last gathering was at the occasion when the old chieftain died and Colum was made chieftain, that's obviously not the only reason for having a gathering, because here there was no one dying and no one new taking over. But it was interesting to hear that it had been 20 years.
Well, it seems that generally they have the gatherings for the oath takings. So uh-huh. Which would make sense when a new laird takes over, that everyone comes in and gives their new oath to the new laird. So for them to have one and not have a new laird, Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of, I don't know if it's different or if they have it on a cycle, a 20-year cycle, unless somebody dies, and then we'll do it sooner.
And this time around, now remember, I read it originally, I've read it before, and I also did a reread this summer before we started this read-along. And for some reason, maybe because I was taking some notes, I caught much more detail and much more a sense of like a village fair, as Diana was describing the, or I guess Claire was describing the atmosphere of people arriving and the different, I won't say necessarily classes, but the different types of people stayed in different places. Some stayed in the castle, some stayed outside the castle, and some stayed down by the bridge. And she mentioned that some down by the bridge, they were roving tinkers, gypsies, and sellers of small goods, and they set up an impromptu fair. For some reason, it reminded me of, I know the 18th century is not in the medieval era, but it reminded me of some kind of medieval fair, or maybe, I guess, slightly more a Ren fair. It just, I don't know, I just got this image of someone piping and dancing and, yeah. I know it's not the right time period, but it just, I got this interesting visual as I read, and I had not gotten that before.
I will only go to their fair if they're serving turkey legs. They smell so good.
So Claire also takes old Alec up on his offer. She visits the stable quite a lot, and this is another way that she builds a routine. So as she sees more and more people arriving, she makes sure that she's seen down there, that people see her down there coming and going. And she also keeps an eye, I think, on the number of horses, because she is planning her escape, or at least looking for a time, looking for the best possible moment where she could get out during the gathering. And she is planning, she says she intends to attempt escape during the gathering because it'll be so busy, people will be drunk and all of this stuff, and she should be able to slip out. That's her plan, at least it seems. So Claire is out with some other ladies picking. She does go picking fruit, but on this occasion, she's actually picking mushrooms. And she meets a very important lady. Who is the person she meets? Gellis.
We'll go with it.
Okay, so she meets Gellis Duncan, who is the procurator. I cannot pronounce that. Procurator. Like proctologist. Oh, procurator. I'm going to say the procurator fiscal. Gellis Duncan is the procurator fiscal's wife. And they discuss some mushrooms. They meet over Claire picking mushrooms, and they discuss some mushrooms, among a few other things. And Claire introduces herself, but Gellis says that she already knows who she is. Then Gellis tells Claire what many of the different plants around are for, and she says it's almost as if she's testing her knowledge or the local suspicion of witchcraft. And Gellis tells Claire that according to rumor, young Hamish is not Colum's son. And when Claire says, oh, well, whose son then? Gellis is like, well, Jamie's, of course. So with meeting Gellis, she gets a little bit of the gossip, but we learn that Gellis is well-educated for that time, and knows a lot about a lot of people, a lot about the village, the castle, as well as the plants. She knows a lot about a lot. And when Claire also gets proof that she already knew she was being watched, but she gets proof that she is when some young woman who is with her, or who goes to get her while she's out picking.
Magdalene.
And then she's actually mentioned, I think, twice in the chapter. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So Magdalene mentions that she must come back in and says, basically lets it slip that she's being watched. And Claire is not able to leave the castle for a bit because there is a bout of food poisoning. And she finds, once she has treated people enough, does what she can, she finds the source, which was a tainted beef carcass. And she goes to confront the smoker. So Dougal comes to find her and says that he understands that she'd probably like a little bit of time away. But he says there's a trip to be made and says that she can come with him as he goes down to the village of Cranesmuir. So Claire goes with him and she meets with Gellis, and she's there to get some herbs for Colum, correct?
Yes.
And as she goes to there with that purpose, when she gets to Gellis's house, she's taken upstairs to the still room, and she looks around and she sees that Gellis is extremely talented with all the way she has herbs hanging and laid out and all of her equipment. She's very knowledgeable in her as an herbalist. And one thing that, again, on any of my reads, never stood out to me, but these words did. As Claire is observing the still room, she observes, quote, a surprisingly modern long counter that ran along one side of the room. And I understand that description was from Claire's point of view, being a more modern person, being a person from the future. But the fact that she sees something looks modern to her now stood out to me. So that was just a small observation I made, an interesting observation I made. And while they're visiting, there's a lot of noise going on in the town square, in the town on the streets below. And Claire looks out, and Father Bain, the local priest, is marching a young boy towards the Fiscal's house. And she chats with Gellis about it, and she finds out, she's wondering if he, you know, what the crime might be, and Gellis says it's probably stealing, and asks about what punishment might be meted out for that. And she finds out it could be whipping, or that he could lose an ear or a hand. And as we see Claire's thoughts, we find out that people, while more accepting of her now, as she said in the beginning of the chapter, that she has a routine and people are coming out of their shells a little bit more with her and trusting her more, and especially asking her things about doctoring and medicine or treating. She still finds people, when she passes, are making the sign against evil surreptitiously. So while they seem to be more accepting, she's also an English woman and represents the enemy, basically. So she's...
This may, in fact, be the only time that she takes a minute and doesn't react.
Yeah. And in that, she, as she's reflecting about this, she thinks about the punishment and she's astounded by it. And she asks Gellis to go talk to her husband to see what she may be able to do. And Gellis is surprised why Claire would be concerned. And again, that Claire gives a very modern answer. She says, he's only a lad. Whatever he did, he doesn't deserve to be mistreated for life. Mutilated for life. And Gellis is surprised by her vehemence, and she goes to speak with her husband. And as she's waiting, Claire is thinking of the gathering crowds, the seemingly bloodthirsty gathering crowds, like the mob mentality of this crowd, and thinks about rumors she had heard while she was still a nurse in the war, rumors about some of the things that the Germans, what they were doing. And she is thinking to herself, if it was happening, that was what she had heard, certainly people saw something, maybe didn't see the atrocities straight away, but saw people being taken away, saw people being missing. Just no one can disappear. Not that many people can disappear without someone knowing or noticing something, but yet they did nothing. Or how can they do nothing? And she also acknowledges that mob rule is how humans have survived for tens of thousands of years as a group. Because the person who steps out to say something is going to be eaten, you know, caveman time, or beaten or killed. So she's afraid, she's thinking of how she wants to go stand against this crowd and potentially defend, would like to think that she would be able to stand against a mob. But she is afraid that she would not have the strength that it would take. And she actually says that she felt ashamed. So I thought that was something that was a very interesting, as you said, she didn't do anything about it.
Well, Claire to me is a very reactive character. She's very instinctual.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't always think about the
ramifications.
The ramifications of the actions that she's going to take might have. So for her to have taken the time to really think about this, I thought was a little odd and maybe even a little out of character for her, based on everything she's done prior. And of course also based on the things we know that are to come book and in further books.
Mm-hmm.
So this one moment I thought was...
It was stood out.
Stood out to me as being very un-Claire-like. And I find it even more un-Claire-like because it worked out well for everyone concerned, mm-hmm. but it's not something she went back to and ever considered again.
And so apparently Gellis was somewhat successful, or according to her, if you would have asked her, she thought she was probably very successful. She was extremely happy with herself when she came back. She got her husband, she talked her husband into giving a much lesser punishment than whipping or losing an ear or a hand. The boy was only going to have one ear nailed to the pillory, I believe.
He was going to be locked at the...
Have one ear nailed. Pillory, yeah. And she, of course, freaks out. She finds it barbaric. Later in the chapter, before it ends, she actually acknowledges that, well, for her time, this would have been barbaric. She thinks that actually Gellis was probably right in saying that this was not as big of a deal, or that he got off lightly compared to what he could have gotten. So Jamie, about this time, comes to fetch her to ride back to the castle, and
he brings a cloak. Colm tells him to go take this cloak.
Yeah.
So that, because it's raining outside,
raining, yeah.
And he imagines that she'll be soaked to the bone. And it's just this juxtaposition of Colm's actions and Colm's words.
Not quite two-faced, but almost.
It's like he says, I don't trust you.
Yet,
you know,
I don't
and
want
I don't
you
know
to
who you
wet.
Are, but hey, I don't want you to get sick, so.
Yeah. Well, he needs a healer. Come on now.
I guess.
He wants, as long as he's got her there, he does not want her to get sick, because then he and his peeps will not have a doctor.
And there's also the chance that she's totally who she says she is, and he doesn't want to bring down the wrath
That's
of
true.
Her family on him.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know. Colm always kind of makes me a little angry.
So Colm sends him down with the instruction of to bring her back safely and not sick and warm and all of that.
So I want to know where Dougal went. Did he just drop her and take off?
That's true, because surely she wouldn't have been spending the night. We didn't hear that. She didn't bring a lot of stuff with her. She went down to get some stuff and leave, and that's true. We never hear about... Well, Dougal must have left, because what Gellis does before she leaves or gets ready to leave supposedly with Jamie, is that Gellis goes and asks Jamie, says, you seem a strong lad. Could you take this crate, this box for us? Or small chest, I'm guessing. And while he loads it up, or while the servants get it ready to go outside, she goes and writes a note, which she then seals and gives to Claire and says, this is the bill. Please give it directly to Dougal, or I won't be paid for weeks. So which means Dougal's not there.
Right.
So, yeah, that's I don't think that's addressed. Because I don't know. If Colm sent Jamie, that means Dougal was not there. Or if, I don't think, I guess Colm could have sent Jamie with a coat. But by this time, though, they're getting ready to leave. And she sees that the boy is still nailed to the pillory. And she asks about it and finds out that the boy has been unlocked. He's been released. But in order for him to truly be able to be gone, he has to pull his own ear off, either off the nail or the nail off the pillory with his ear, some combination of something, to be freed, totally freed. And she is again abhorred by this, and understandably so. So as she wants to approach Jamie to ask about maybe offering the boy some help in some way, she calls him, maybe because they're in public around others, but she calls him Mr. McTavish, and he doesn't answer.
Because it's not his name.
Well, it's not his name, and then now she's like, okay, look, it was one thing for him not to do it before, but this is like, he is full on not replying. So then she tries Jamie, he looks up, and they start to talk, so she remarks that he's definitely not a McTavish. If she had any doubt, it's gone now. So they do chat. Jamie agrees to help, quote-unquote, help the boy go. Literally, I guess, help him get loose. And they go over. The plan was for them to go over together to act as if they were going to have a look-see. And then Claire, feigning being sickened or overtaken by the gruesomeness or by the view, was going to faint, and in her faint fall off the
platform. Well, she was going to create the distraction.
Yes, so fall off the platform and create enough distraction for Jamie to pull the nail out of the boy's ear, and the boy would go home and or run away so that he would not be any more affected by the mob. And their plan apparently does go according to plan. And clarify, it just makes me laugh when I think of her having found a woman to plan to pull down with her off the platform. They could have had, the women could have had petticoats. I don't know what their dress was like, but I have more of a 19th century vision in my mind of women falling off a platform with feet in the air and petticoats showing and layers and layers and layers of stuff. So that's obviously the wrong time period, but that's the giggle image I get in my mind when I think of people falling off or fainting and falling off of a platform. And then she says it was funny. She says the townspeople or the village people were kindness itself, as they were worried about her, the same ones who wanted blood from this little boy. So yeah, it was a nice comparison. And Jamie successfully got the boy loose, and then he went to go pick up Claire. And because she had faked a faint, they had to allow her to be taken care of, to follow through with that lie. And then she went back to Gisela. They went back to Gellis's house, and she was given blankets and warm drinks and to make sure that she was truly okay from her fall, which of course she was. And finally, Jamie's like, we gotta go. And they go back to the castle. And as he leaves her at the gate, he says to her...
She apologizes. Well, not really apologizes, but she says, it was a risk to you. I didn't realize you'd be in danger when I asked you.
To help out with the boy, yeah.
Right. And he said, what did he say? You wouldn't expect me to be less bold than a wee Sassenach lassie now, would you?
And then as he leaves her at the castle gate, he says, good e'en, Mistress Sassenach. Good e'en. She's been called Sassenach before, but it's becoming a little more of a kind of tongue-in-cheek now, and we'll see where it develops from there.
It's becoming more of an endearment than an insult now.
So yeah, she is called Sassenach a few times, and it still could be definitely used as an insult, but it's kind of... been turned
But it's definitely not stated as an insult.
No, he is not using it as an insult. So it's kind of become, not a joke, but it's become much lighter. We can say it's much lighter.
That wraps up chapter 9. Next week we will be moving on to chapter 10. It's titled The Oath Taking. I hope you'll all read along with us and come back and join us for a discussion. Again, if you ever have anything that you'd like to add, you're more than welcome to leave us a message on either Twitter, Facebook, or send us an email, and we'd be happy to include anything you'd like to add and be a part of the show with us.
And don't forget, you can always upload a boo at Audioboo. You can record up to, I think it's 30 seconds, I'm not sure, question or comment. And the difference, it does not have to be included, but the benefit of leaving a question or comment on Audioboo is that if you give us permission or if you would like us to, we have the ability to include that in our podcast. Whereas otherwise, it's just us, our two boring voices, the same voices in every episode, reading someone else's comment, which we still love to do. But we'd also like to give other fans a chance to be included in our read-along, literally.
So I guess that wraps up the 11th. Episode of the Outlander podcast.
Thank you again, as always, so much for joining us. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/outlanderpod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.